Hi everybody, Wynn Claybaugh here. Welcome to Masters. I'm sitting here with Leon Alexander. So first of all, welcome to Masters.
Thank you, Wynn.
We are in San Diego. I love this town.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's incredible.
75 degrees every day, sunny, temperate weather.
Where's home for you?
Currently Sarasota, Florida. Also a great place to live. We also get the sunset because we're on the west coast of Florida.
Yeah, beautiful area.
Yeah, it's... It's a nice place in the winter.
Obviously, you have an accent, so you're not from Sarasota. You're
no,
British?
No, I'm a Londoner, born and bred in London, lived all my life, and was educated there as well.
Now, you are here in San Diego. I mean, get this. Yesterday, you were speaking. I'm looking at the flyer from yesterday. You were sharing the stage with Billie Jean King, Michelle Obama. Pretty nice lineup that you... are a part of. Congratulations.
Thank you. I was very impressed to listen to those two people because you make a judgment on someone and what you see politically, but there was no political talk. It was their journey. And each person has a journey to get to where they are, and we see the end result, but we don't see the drive that gets them there. You know, one of the most important things I got out of that is that one component of successful people is persistency, just persistency, and focus. You know, if you can focus on anything long enough, the chances of you making it great are wonderful. What people do is, if you're bright people, they focus, they get distracted on things. But if you focus and focus and focus and don't get distraction, those are the people that get to the final goal that they achieve.
I think nowadays, I like what you're saying, because nowadays, we want things instantly. You know, we watch a sitcom that's 30 minutes, so the whole storyline, everything is resolved, everything happens in 30 minutes. With technology and with social media, it's so instant. And I think people have I have 20,000 Instagram followers. Am I a success? You know, did I arrive? I've already accomplished that. And they think it's supposed to happen that long.
Yeah, we do. The internet has made us impatient. Have you ever pressed the button of an elevator when the button's already illuminated?
Of course. Right. And then you push it five more times.
Right? You know, no matter how many times you press it, even Steve Jobs couldn't have got it to come any quicker.
Right.
It's just we are impatient.
Right.
It's an impatient society. People wait 15 seconds when they call and they hang up. If you don't pick up the phone with the first 15 seconds, they go.
Oh, my gosh.
Waiting for a credit card to process and things like that, people are impatient.
Right.
It's easy to say, take a breath, focus, don't be impatient. It seems wise to do that, but sometimes we get wrapped up in things unnecessary. Hmm. We can just focus on something and take our time and try. There was a great book written a few years ago, Wake Up and Smell the Coffee. Don't sweat the small stuff. That was another great book.
Another great book.
Yeah, just get out of your own way. Just try to take in, when you go into a room, when you go anywhere, try to take in all the important environmental things that you see, all the important components. At some point in your life, you'll be able to reshare that. And if we can't reshare what we know, what's the point?
Well, that's part of your expertise, which we're going to get into, back to... this event that you got to have yesterday with Michelle Obama speaking and Billie Jean King. You know, somebody, a good friend or mentor years ago taught me to not judge the source. And it's amazing how many people, they judge the source, they judge whoever the person is, and therefore could care less what the person has to say, even though the information might be valid, might be brilliant, might be useful for their own daily lives. And so I love it that you said that there was not a political message.
There wasn't. And the reason that we judge is because of our filters.
Right.
We have filters within us, depending on where we are in life. And we prejudge someone. If we are a man or a woman, we would prejudge something differently as far as a cost value. Whatever the product might be, if you are in India or America, you prejudge the price differently. If you're a student or an architect, you'll prejudge it. We prejudge things because of our filters.
Let me give our listeners a bit more information on who you are. So you were the general manager for Vidal Sassoon from 1969 to 1980, before I was born. Past owner of 320 salons and schools in the UK, director of Aveda Distributor in the United Kingdom, designer for Aveda Salons, CEO of your own company, and author of A Window into the Consumer Mind. So what's your elevator description of the career that you have? What do you tell people when they ask you, who are you and what do you do?
I hope I'm a thought provoker. That's what I hope they see me as. At different stages of my life, I've thought differently. I'm now on a journey to elevate the thinking of people within my industry. That is important to me at this stage of my life. At 20, I probably wouldn't have had that thought.
Weren't we all idiots?
It was survival.
Yeah, okay. Right.
But to me, to be able to look at things from a different perspective, more of a lateral perspective instead of just a logical perspective, we've been educated to make decisions logically and to think how past thinkers thought. When we leave school, that's how we get that information. As a child, we had imagination. A cardboard box was a house, a car, a fort, and something happened. We went to school. So I'm a great believer in that you have to kind of look at the future and say, how do I look at things not just logically, emotionally and laterally? There are many, many permutations you can get by looking at something laterally. Perfect analogy. If I was to put an X in front of people and ask them what one word would universally describe that, they would say, well, it's an X. But what else could it be? It could be a times. It could be a multiply. It could be 10 in Roman numerals. It could be a kiss on a letter. It could be wrong. There's so many things. If you think laterally, logically, it's an X. But laterally, it has multiple options. So that's my journey, is getting people to think differently.
So reading from your bio here, in 2006, you launched Urisco Design with a vision of designing space around the emotional needs of consumer, accommodating the functionality of service. You studied how customers think and act within a specific environment and designs the location accordingly. So, but you're educated in this. This isn't just a hobby. You have a doctorate degree in behavioral psychology. You have designed and presented a wide range of educational courses to the retail and service industries, including Why People Buy, The Ultimate Consumer Location, Creative and Lateral Thinking, A Window into the Consumer's Mind, and Neuromarketing. Bottom line, you are helping people who are listening to this increase sales, increase client loyalty. So
our industry, the beauty industry that I'm in and been in all my life, designed salons around a service business. After the millennium, retail became more prominent within this beauty industry. But it never was a business within a business for most places. It was always a secondary thing. What I believe we need to do is design space around the emotions of the consumer, accommodating the functionality of service. So it's a paradigm shift. That's what Apple stores do. That's what serious retailers do and service providers do outside of our industry. By emulating the best practices of marketers like Walt Disney, of service providers like Michelin restaurants, and retailers like Apple, they understand the consumer and design their business model accordingly. It's the same consumer that comes into Apple, that comes into a salon. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, our industry adopted the word guest. You don't sell to guests. Guests come to my house and I wouldn't want to sell to them. Hmm. I can imagine greeting friends at the door. Lovely to see you. I haven't seen you for 3 weeks. Come through. Would you like a glass of wine? $15, please. you don't sell to guests. It's a mindset.
Right.
Now, of course, by all means, call them a guest, but think of them as a consumer, because that's exactly what they are. And if you think of them as a consumer, a whole new marketing strategy opens up. The fundamental goal is to give them exactly what consumers require. If you present a consumer strategy, they will buy, as
so,
we do.
So you say that we have to escape the usual initiatives and learn to look at your business in a new way. So what is it that we have to escape from? I guess, what are the mistakes that we're making in terms of the space and in the environment?
Traditionally, salons came into a front desk. And it's a physical and psychological barrier between you and the consumer.
Oh, wow. So I'm not allowed beyond this point. Even if all the product and anything that I'm interested in purchasing or looking at is behind there, I'm not allowed back.
Correct. The whole idea is to create entertainment for consumers. We've evolved in our industry from service then to an experience. The better salons are now giving personalized experiences are much better than a generic experience. But the future is all of that plus entertainment. The millennials require entertainment. And we're now working on no desks, self-check-in, like Amazon Go. You just come in with an iPad and you check yourself in and you check yourself out, which enables the operators and service providers to connect more with the consumer. The goal isn't to communicate. It's to connect.
Sure.
When I'm on stage, I'm communicating. I don't know that I'm connecting. It's only when I'm one-on-one with someone do I really know that I'm connecting. So by designing a business where you have several zones, the shampoo area should be a zen area. The color area should be exciting and energetic. The styling area should be effective. And the retail area should be serious retail. All of those zones put together as the ultimate consumer location. So wherever I go, I'm getting a series of experiences and entertainment. It's not just in the retail area. It's not about retail. It's about giving the consumer a series of experiences.
Say what those zones are again. You said the shampoo area.
The shampoo area should be a zen, relaxing, no-selling area. Scalp massage, lights are low, just a really nice area to be in.
Okay, so you said a no-selling area. So what are the mistakes that we're making?
We're talking to people when we're shampooing them.
We're trying to talk about what we're using, why we're using it,
what
they should be using at home, and we shouldn't be doing that.
No.
Okay.
In the color area, where we used to have dispensaries hidden at the back, now I'm designing space where you go through the color area to get to the styling area. Mm-hmm. It becomes the focal point. And we're doing double-sided color labs where people sit all around in a circle with iPads built in and they're being entertained. It's fun. And if anybody doesn't have color, they think, maybe I should.
Mm-hmm.
In the retail area, we're now working on a system where when you pick up a bottle of shampoo, it's Bluetooth to a monitor behind in the wall unit, and a video pops up relative to this bottle of shampoo.
Hmm.
And if you touch the screen, it tells you the features, the benefits, and what are the products it links to it.
Hmm.
You're entertaining the consumer. We're designing salons now with things other than the core business. We've just done one in Grand Cayman with a wine bar. High street location, wine bar. People come in for a glass of wine, a paid glass of wine. It looks like a high-end wine bar. And they may buy a product, and they may have a service, but not necessarily.
Hmm.
But you're getting them into your location, which is the fundamental goal. The longer someone's in a location equates to how much they buy. So the longer you can keep them, the more chance that you have a higher average ticket.
Well, I think you and I have a mutual friend in Sarasota who's opening up a cheese and wine bar within the salon space.
Yes.
Can't wait to see and hear how that turns out. Knowing her, I'm sure it's going to be brilliant.
Yes, I'm sure it will.
Wow.
So I think that's a fundamental goal. You know, we think of Starbucks as a coffee shop. With Starbucks now selling beer and wine and newspapers and food and all other things. 48% of their sales are things other than coffee.
Really? Wow.
CVS has increased, it's a pharmacy, but it's increased its cosmetics from 14% to 38% of its business. Gas stations wouldn't survive only on gas. You've got cigarettes and beer and all sorts of things you can buy from there.
Right.
So if coffee shops are selling, gas stations are selling, and pharmacies are selling things other than their core products, why are we just doing web products?
Right.
Why are we not doing things that would keep the consumer longer and give them multiple reasons why they would attend, multiple reasons why they would create a higher average ticket?
You mentioned Solana selling wine. What other things are you seeing or that are you recommending?
High-end coffee shops. We're just doing a salon.
With salons that have a high-end coffee shop
right.
within
the And they're not actually running it themselves. It's a concession to someone who really understands, a barista, to do high-end coffee shop, like an espresso bar. We're just working on a project in London that will have a concession for Gucci shoes and Gucci handbags.
Within the salon?
Within the salon.
Sweet.
I mean, it's a large salon, high-profile location.
I'm in. I'll hang out there.
Right. So, I mean, the whole idea is that you create more reasons for people crossing into your business.
Okay.
The Dry Bar in Vegas, I was there recently.
Mm-hmm.
They have a bar there for guys waiting for the ladies to have cocktails.
Beautiful.
So there are lots of reasons, but I've always say this, you can't build the future with legacy thinking.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'll elaborate. Today's initiatives are tomorrow's minimum standards with increasing rapidity. What we're doing today, we can't do that in a month's time or a year's time. We have to keep reinventing. And the way that we learn, it's very easy to predict the future. Study the people that's going to occupy it. The millennials, the Gen Xs. Study what the best retailers, marketers outside of the industry are doing. And emulate those best practices and bring it into the industry and bring it into your business.
What did they say? The six words of a failing business are, we've always done it that way?
Exactly.
And you talk about what we did a month ago, maybe isn't going to serve us today, that it is moving that quickly.
What we've seen over the last 10 years will not compare to the imminent future with technology.
Hmm.
In Germany, they're operating in two salons with wireless blow dryers. No wires.
Hmm. Do you feel like maybe the beauty industry is behind?
Yes.
In embracing technology? Because we say, well, it's never going to affect our industry because you can't get a haircut online. They have to come into our space. And so does it have people in the beauty industry use that as an excuse to then not embrace technology where they actually could, that would provide a better service and experience, entertainment, as you say, for their consumer, for their customer?
I think most salons do, and I don't want to generalize because some people do get it.
Right.
But Amazon has had a major effect on retailing, period, not just the beauty industry.
Right.
They see beauty products as a major area where they could get more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's had a major effect on retailing. Intercoiffeur, which is a body of top hairdressing salons, have announced that retail sales as a percent of overall sales are way down in their base.
Right.
What other reason is that people can buy online. So in order to compete with buying online, I strongly believe people are social.
Mm.
They want to interconnect with people. We have to make it fun for them to come and be entertained to buy products. Otherwise, they're going to buy online. It's convenient.
It's convenient, but it doesn't have that entertainment
factor.
It doesn't.
No. And yet, the vast increase of cosmetics purchases via Amazon has been amazing.
You've used the word connect several times. Talk to us more about that. I think you said communicating versus really connecting with.
So everyone says we need to communicate better. Well, if I'm communicating something, I have to be sure that you as the receiver understand the implications of my thoughts and convey it accurately. I don't know that until I react with you on a response, whether you got what I was going to say and I get what you're going to say. Connecting isn't one way. Communicating could be. Connecting is I understand the implications of what you're saying and you understand the implications of what I'm saying. You don't have to agree, but you understand the implications. That's a fundamental key, whereas a manager or owner needs to understand and connect with his or her staff. The staff have to connect with the consumers. And if you can connect with people, it's such much more powerful thing than you're communicating. I could read at a staff meeting exactly what I would like them to do. I'm communicating. But am I really connecting? Probably not.
Not until you're eavesdropping at the bar later on and you overhear their conversation about what you had to say in the staff meeting.
Right. And what you want them to do is you want them to cut feedback. You want them to challenge you. Well, the top salons and the top businesses want them to challenge you. You take top people on, allow them to challenge you. And that's a healthy environment to be in.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us about more of the experience. Because you mentioned Starbucks and other coffee houses. They took what was a commodity, i.e. coffee, turned it into a product, turned it into a service, and then turned it into an experience. Not about coffee anymore. It's about the experience. And an experience creates a memory for people.
Exactly right. If you think of a black hole, you can't see it. But science can prove it's there. It's the same with an experience. You can't see it, but you know it when you've got it. Mm. What Starbucks have done with experiences and what Apple have done as well is it's not one component. It's a series, and I'll use Starbucks as an analogy. Starbucks have 7 foundations that they rule on. They have a color scheme. They have lighting. They have graphics. They always have 11 graphics. They have shelf talkers. They have the chairs. If you were to take, and subliminally, you are in this Starbucks environment. Color psychology is very important to Starbucks. And it affects the brain in a certain way to an environment. That's why each zone, color zone, should be important. Brown is conducive to hunger. That's why McDonald's trays are brown. That's why restaurants use brown a lot. Pale blue is conducive to calming. That's why prisons and hospitals use it. Red to purple triggers the brain into activity, and that's why an accent color at the back of the store brings you to the back, and it contributes to buying. Doesn't make you buy, but it contributes to buying.
So somebody told me that's why gambling casinos are red. Creates impulse or something, I don't know.
Well, it's not one thing, it's a combination of this. So subliminally, you're in this 7 foundation environment that Starbucks put together. If you took the shelf talkers away from Starbucks, would Starbucks be successful? Yes, it would. But it would have an incremental reduction on the potential of the business. So by putting all of the foundations, you are maximizing the potential of the business. And why wouldn't we want to maximize the potential of the business? I often hear salon owners say, I want to bring my sound to the next level. I'm never sure what that means. What if I increase your business by 2%? Would you be happy with that? No. See, the next level is undefined. What I want to do is I want to maximize the potential of a business. Begin with the end in mind, as Covey once said. Mm-hmm. Begin with the end in mind. Maximize the potential of the business. And not just the retail area, not just the service area, but everything. Why wouldn't we want to do that with our business? To maximize it and be pioneers within the industry.
So maybe hairdressers and other service providers in the beauty industry, and people listening to this who are not in the beauty industry are thinking, well, my haircut is brilliant and that's all I need to focus on. What you're saying is, cool, have that brilliant haircut, but why not maximize all of the other senses as well? So let's just start with the mistakes that people are making. I always like to start there. so people can, as they're listening to this, thinking, oh my gosh, he's talking about me right now. What are the mistakes that salons are making? You already mentioned one, that front desk barrier is a mistake that people make.
Well, the first mistake I've mentioned in a different way before is to think these are clients and these are guests. These are consumers.
Okay.
That doesn't mean to say you don't treat them with the most civility and give them the best quality service and the best services operating. That is your core business.
The same as all these other companies do that you have mentioned, from Apple to Disney to all the other. They all think that way as well.
They all think that way. There's a reason, other than the product, why it's that successful. There are many products out there that are fantastic products, but they've never really made the level because of the business model and the strategy. The important thing when you're setting up a business is this, and this is what I do on a clean piece of paper. I create a strategic blueprint. On that strategic blueprint, I have on the left-hand side the core purpose of the business, my vision, my values. What are my values? And my mission. My next column, I have my resources, I would say. My financial resources, my human resources, my technological resources. And then I have my initiatives. What is it I want to achieve? And then I have my strategies based on my initiatives. And the final column is my key measurement. So on that one piece of paper, I have everything that encompasses my business model on a strategic blueprint. There's no point in having an initiative if you don't have a strategy to take your initiative. Mm-hmm. There's no point having a strategy if you can't measure it. So that's a fundamental key. And there's no point having an initiative if your key resources aren't set up to support that. Mm-hmm. All of that has to come under your value system. That mission and that value system must be communicated to your team. Hmm. They must understand what your mission and team. And you have to have people that would embrace that mission and understand it. In not only your team, you should share that with the media. You should share that with your customers so that they are aware of your mission. It's a proud thing. It shouldn't be in the drawer or on a wall just somewhere. It's just something that we should always go back to and adjust, strategic blueprint.
You say in this new brave era of consumer behavior, we learn about what we do, notice what we notice, ignore what we ignore, we buy what we buy, and that this strategy will change forever the way you look at service, marketing, retailing, and consumers. So when you go into, and by the way, I've seen some of the, you've sent me designs of salons that you have created, and you're not just going in as an interior decorator.
No.
You're not going in and say, well, this color really goes well with this fabric, which goes really, really well with this texture. That's not what you're doing. Although those elements are...
It's environmental psychology.
It's environmental psychology.
Yes.
That's the elevator dialogue.
It is. Look, there's three components to any business. Leave the beauty industry aside for a moment. Just let's take the retail business or the service business, period. There's three components that are critical. There is retail anthropology, and what that means is the direction people walk in. So we know on retail anthropology that you don't put anything in the first 5-6 feet of a front door, because the consumer is adjusting from the temperature outside to the inside.
Interesting.
The pace on outside, they're walking faster than on the inside. The lighting is different from the outside to the inside. The nerve endings are changing. They don't notice anything in the first 5-6 because they're adjusting to the changes in the outside to the inside environment.
Okay.
The American consumer walks as they drive. So they would walk into a store and go to the right. So your promotions are zone one on the right.
Okay.
Because that's exactly what you want to promote. New products, promotions.
So are you saying in the UK it's different?
Correct. It is.
Because they're driving towards the left.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Your primary product, bread, milk, shampoo, the best-selling primary product, is the back of zone two, right at the back of store. So you go all the way to the back. Your checkout is in zone
three. Wait, so you're going, you get it, I'm going to get it. Meaning, you know people are going to go find the bread, the milk, they're going to go find the shampoo.
Right.
It doesn't need to be front and center.
It shouldn't be front and center.
Okay. It's at the back because you know they're going to walk back there and there's so much you can do with them on their journey back there.
Yes. The fundamental goal of any designer is to expose the consumer to the greatest amount of inventory for the longest period of time.
Hmm.
That equates to how much they spend.
Okay.
So if I had the
primary product... Say that again. You want to expose them.
You want to expose the consumer to the greatest amount of inventory for the longest period of time.
Okay.
So if I was to put my primary product at the front, I'll get that and I'll go to the checkout.
Okay.
Missed opportunity.
I'm not hanging out. I'm not venturing back into other spaces and environments. Okay.
Right. So that's the power of environmental psychology.
Okay.
And if I was to give you another analogy of environmental psychology, if you take a multipurpose spa room, if the lights are low and the walls are neutral and the essences are calming and the music's soft, you are distressing as you enter that room. Before anybody touches you, you are distressing. That's the power of environmental psychology. It's exactly the same in a retail area or in a service area. You want to create an environment conducive to exactly what you want to achieve. So you want a buying environment in the retail, a more energetic environment in the color and styling area, a relaxing in the shampoo area and the spa area. So it's a selection of not only zones, but different environments that you have to achieve through environmental psychology.
You talked about the different zones from the shampoo area to the color to retail to styling. And now you're talking about different spaces or different experiences within each of those zones. So I get it how the music would change between the shampoo area, that zen area, and the styling area. Are you saying that the music would be different in...
Absolutely.
In the color area, and it would be different in the retail area?
Music is a major component to our moods. People buy far more, much more wine, more expensive wine, when classical music's being played. So if you did a wine bar with classical music, it denotes a higher-end feeling. So a lot of top wine shops play classical music, and people buy more expensive wine. So there isn't one component. We talked about color psychology, we talked about music, we talked about environment. I am leading you on a journey, and nobody does it better than IKEA. Has anybody ever found their way out of IKEA?
You can't.
They are leading you on a journey
around.
Department stores have done this for years. You've got to walk all the way around to get what you want.
Right.
Now, of course, most businesses are not as big as IKEA or department stores, but you still can create the zones and environments that direct people in a way that you want them to go. You're modifying their behavior subliminally.
Okay, so, well, let's just talk about these different components then. So music, what in a salon that is 1,500 square feet is going to be different than a salon that's 30,000 square feet. So talk to us about what kind of music they should be looking at.
Well, I think that it depends on the demographics. There isn't one thing I would say, this is the music you should have in all salons, that wouldn't be appropriate.
Right.
It really depends on the demographics. But one thing I would say, never let the staff choose the music.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Then it changes from morning, and then there's this ongoing battle about who gets to choose
music. Look, what I used to do in the salons is from 9 till 10, I always had classical music.
Okay.
Let people kind of chill, and then it kind of evolved into light jazz.
Okay.
And we didn't really do this bang, bang, bang music at all, because people want to get away from it. And it was an octane that was, you could still have a conversation.
Right.
And that's also key. the acoustics has to be, you can't have a speaker here and that I can't sit at this chair because that's noisier than that chair. Okay. It has to be equally dispersed.
Okay. Let's talk about lighting.
Lighting.
I don't know where I got it from, but I've been in business now for 35 years, and my employees who worked for me 35 years ago will tell you to this day of what a pain in the I was about lighting. And I don't know why. I don't know where I got that from. But I'm the same way at home. Like the second I walk in the door, it's all about the lighting. The first thing that I do is I adjust the lighting, whether it's candles or it's lowering this or raising this or whatever. There's just something about lighting that has a big impact on me.
You're absolutely right. And going back to what I was saying before, and one of the foundations of Starbucks is lighting. Hmm. So lighting is critical. It's critical for two reasons. One, let's talk about service providers. Service providers need lighting that is equally dispersed and no shadows for the consumer. When they're cutting hair, they need to see the hair. They can't have a shadow on the back. So you need good lighting. For the consumer, it can affect their moods.
Right.
You don't want intense lighting. But what you do want in a beauty salon is natural daylight lighting. So if somebody has a color or a makeup, the same color is the same in the salon as when she walks out.
Right.
And that's fundamentally key. And sometimes, more often than not, the lighting is wrong. Hmm. And people don't know what's wrong about this salon. More often than not, it's the lighting. It can give you a headache.
Meaning the consumer or even the employees who work there, they leave.
Yeah, they don't know why.
Okay.
But lighting affects the mood. Okay. It affects the mood. That's why, you know, candles, a wonderful thing at home. I mean, I do the same thing. You know, I just dim the lights. No direct lighting. In the shampoo area, up lighting, reflective lighting to create the mood.
Hmm. Let's talk about color. You talked about how different colors create certain impulses or certain moods. So talk about the best use of color within a salon environment.
Again, it really depends on if I'm doing a salon in New York down in Soho, or I'm doing one in a suburban area that's more traditional. I certainly wouldn't put an industrial look into a local salon if the consumer is more mature. Mm-hmm. So again, there isn't a thumb rule there, so you should use these colors and those colors, because then they become trends, and I think that's a dangerous thing to do. I kind of look at each project differently, but the whole goal is to not notice the furniture or the color. It's to be in an environment that you just feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to walk away from there and say, well, the color of this salon was great or the furniture was great. No, it's about creating an ambience, an environment that you feel good in there and you want to come back and you want to talk to people. So what I tend to do is I tend to do ivory neutral walls.
Okay.
And I have accent colors in two key components, behind the check-in and behind the color area at the back of the store.
Why those two areas?
Well, one, because it creates a sense of depth and it's more fun. So if you have a color department, you've got purple wall, red wall. It creates a sense of fun. Something's happening in that environment subconsciously.
Okay.
And behind the desk, you've just got two accent colors. You shouldn't have primary two stronger colors on the walls because you're looking at the walls.
Right.
The walls should be just neutral. And the people should be the ones that are focused on.
Got it.
It's all about the people. But all these components subliminally, I use the word subliminally, create this mood. And that's what you're doing. You're creating an environment to make consumers feel good and comfortable. This is my zone. It's the third place. My home is my first place.
That's so funny. I just wrote that down, third place. I was just going to ask you about that.
Right. My home is the first place. My workplace is the second place. The salon is the third place.
Right.
The business is the third place.
I've heard people talk about how, especially in the 50s and the 60s, it was this salon. It was the barbershop that was the local hangout for the entire community.
Correct.
Even if you weren't there to get a service, this is where we all gathered, this is where we all talked, this is where we all met. And now it's become an Apple store, or it's become a bookstore, it's become a coffee shop, is where people are hanging out. That's their third place. And so for us to reclaim that, for us to create those environments where people just want to hang out.
It goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. If we continue just having a business with just a service in it, people are going to come for the service and they're not going to get a series of experiences.
Got it.
There's a reason people hang out in Starbucks, and it's they can relax. They can check their email. They can read a paper.
Oh, there are people that move in. They're there for hours and hours. Yeah. They order one cup of coffee and they're there for hours.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's their office.
Let's talk about, because if we were considering the five senses, let's talk about taste. What should salons be offering? I mean, you've mentioned wine.
Well,
just in a basic salon, what should they be offering so that they are appealing, entertaining, as you, the word that you like to use, to create that experience, which creates that memory for that consumer?
It depends on square footage.
Okay.
The truth is, quite a lot of salons that are smaller, and they don't have the ability to say, okay, I want to bring a coffee or a wine bar in. So there's a tipping point, usually 2,500, 3,000 square feet and above, where you can do that. On an existing location or on a new project, you can plan it up front. So when it comes to a salon that has the ability to do that, and you are in a state that allows you to sell wine, and of course there's different components, and you are not a destination location, so there's lots of kind of things. You can't say, well, yes, you should have wine. Well, if you're just destination and your state doesn't allow you, you've got to think of something else. Mm-hmm. The fundamental goal of a salon is to maximize on the experience of the consumer while they're in, and maximize on what you can present to them.
Okay.
It's a responsibility to present to them effectively and not allow them to leave and go purchase somewhere else. So by having a high-end coffee house, most people have coffee or tea every day. Wine, a lot of people do, not everyone, particularly in the evenings. Wine's an evening, more of an evening thing, whereas coffee you can have any day. So I would say a juice bar, fresh juices, fresh coffee, not doing it yourself. It's got to be at a level that competes with Starbucks.
Right.
Or Nespresso. Nespresso got a great concept, and the design of Nespresso is great. It's different to Starbucks, mm-hmm. but they've done it very well as well. Mm-hmm. There's a tasting bar.
How often should we be changing the environment? Like I've noticed the new look of Starbucks. There's one there on the Disney Walk. Somebody told me it was one of their highest volume stores, just opened within the last 6 months, I think. They have another new one out in Palm Springs, where I have a home out in Palm Springs, and the Starbucks there is just ridiculous. But you notice that the elements have changed. Some of the colors have changed. Some of the textures have changed. Some of the signage has changed. So how often should we be rebranding or reinventing the look and the feel?
Well, budget is a great decider.
Okay, all right.
But ignoring budget for one moment, if we can.
Right.
A business should change every 8 to 10 years. Every 8 to 10 years, it should have a completely new vision, a new look. For two reasons. To keep and attract quality personnel. Would you want to work in a beautifully designed place
right.
or not? And to keep and attract consumers.
Right.
That's very important. Even if the furniture or the design hasn't dated.
Okay.
But the key is not to do a trend. And I'll give you an example of the dangers of trends.
Is that because it goes out of style and now you're spending ridiculous amounts of money trying
right.
to keep up with the next
right.
trend? Okay.
For a period of time, 2 years, recycled, reclaimed wood look was very fashionable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it isn't. And shades of white is fashionable. So when you're doing something, think, is this going to be okay in 8, 10 years' time?
Right.
Doesn't matter what business it is. Don't do it because it's a trend. That to me is, you're going to be dated pretty quickly.
Well, and you said every 8 to 10 years. Is there other stuff that should be happening during those 8 to 10 years? Obviously, cleanliness and repainting, I mean, that's just right. a given, but is there other stuff?
I strongly believe that you should reevaluate your business every month.
Wow.
Reevaluate. Now, it doesn't mean to say that you change, but what additional services can be there? The biggest growth in our industry over the last 5 years has been blow dry bars, mm-hmm. right? So you might think, okay, am I in a high volume area with a lot of disposable income where I could actually introduce that service?
Okay.
If not, I shouldn't introduce that. So it doesn't mean to say that you do it. You should evaluate the business and say, okay, this is happening. It's not going away. They have over 200 locations now, and it's the biggest growth in our industry. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by reevaluating. Let's see what's happening. Reevaluate what we actually do.
Mm-hmm.
And what could we do better?
Let's talk a lot about technology and how that has changed the consumer.
Well,
you were talking about entertaining the consumer. Is that mostly through the use of technology, or is there other ways of entertaining the consumer to keep them in our space?
Well, it's mostly through technology, but I'll give you some examples of what the consumer's experiencing outside of the beauty industry. Last year I was in London. I went to Burberry's on Regent Street.
Mm-hmm.
When a consumer takes a piece of clothing from the rack and puts it in front of a mirror, a catwalk of a model appears in the mirror.
Are you serious?
Showing this piece of clothing.
Really?
Because the RFID, which is radio frequency, is built into the clothing and shows her that.
Wow.
If the consumer then takes a piece of clothing in a store and goes into a changing room, music appears appropriate to this piece of clothing. So
what would be appropriate music to
if I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt, for example,
okay.
a luau music
Are
would
you
appear
serious?
Absolutely.
That's great.
It's radio frequency built into the clothing that music. So you feel in the mood. Okay. You're creating the mood.
I really want this Hawaiian shirt today.
Right, right.
That's great.
So
okay.
One other thing as an example is in some places in London, if you go into the changing room, a computer scans your avatar and superimposes you onto the screen. And you can try on every piece of clothing in the store without getting undressed by changing the clothing, changing the size, changing the color. So you can try on 20, 30, 40 pieces of clothing within 10, 15 minutes without getting undressed.
Wow.
Or saying, this size, I want a smaller or a larger size, I prefer it in this color. You can do that. That's what the consumer's getting when they're being outside of the industry. So one of the things that would be interesting that is going to be coming is I talked a little bit about radio frequency, RFID. In a salon in London that's a high street salon that's open to 10 hours a day, it's open for 24 hours for retail because the window has RFID in it, and by touching the window, you get product straight away. When it's closed. So that's going to dramatically change retail. Amazon Go.
Wait. So back to that.
Yeah.
Meaning they're receiving the product
Absolutely.
Then or it's being shipped to
No, receiving it then. Instant.
Okay.
Instant gratification. People don't want it shipped if they can get it straight away.
Got it.
Yeah, so it's a glass window and you can touch the screen. You can get food as well. You can get drinks from the window.
Wow. So you talk about the convenience of a 24-hour store within a salon, even though the salon is closed, consumers can still purchase. Within the beauty industry, how do we compete with the Amazons where our consumers, our guests, our customers can purchase the same products sitting at home and have it delivered to their home? How do we compete with that? Not that you haven't already talked about it in terms of engaging the customer and bringing them in. And what was the word that you used that I really liked? You seduce them into buying. So I like all of that. But give us some more input on that.
Well, I'm mindful of what Walt Disney said. Think of what the competition are doing and do completely the opposite.
Hmm.
You cannot compete at the same level as Amazon. You have to have a completely different strategy. that strategy in some areas that I've noticed, whereas some people have their charges, including the product, the take-home product. So if their charge is for $40 for a haircut or $60 for a haircut, they charge $65 and give them a product. That's one way of doing it.
Okay.
Linking the product. See, if you've been in business for more than 2 years and 50% of your customers are regular, you're more in the business of reselling than retailing, which is larger sizes, broader line. So how do you have clinics for people to understand the professional product, bring people together so they understand what that would be?
Hmm.
What I used to do is I didn't rely on service providers to sell retail. I never had front desk people. I had retail specialists who educated people and put them on. And the way to do it is using the senses, which you can't do with Amazon. If I was to say to you, this is a bottle of shampoo, that's fine, you can see it. If I was to put it in your hand, you can touch it. If I took the lid off and said, smell it, you can smell it. The more senses you can get them engaged in, the greater chance of them buying it. They've virtually bought it. If I've got to the third sense of smell, touch, and see, you want to buy it.
Amazon can't do that.
They can't do that.
Right.
They can't do that. And also, you know, Zig Ziglar said, sell the sizzle, not the sausage. Don't sell a bottle of shampoo. You know, the greatest two words in marketing is just imagine.
Just imagine.
The greatest two words in marketing. It's neuromarketing, not marketing. And just imagine what this will do for your skin.
Just imagine.
Just imagine driving this convertible. Don't sell a car. Just imagine what you're going to be like in this convertible.
Wow.
Just imagine what you can do with the savings.
That's great. Just imagine. And again, the advice that you just gave about involving the other senses that ordering through Amazon cannot provide.
They can't provide that.
Smell it. They can touch it. But then all that other stuff is going on around them that you've already talked about, from the lighting to the music to all that consumer psychology of drawing them in and keeping them engaged as long as possible.
Right.
All that's happening as well.
So let me give you one fundamental goal that I think is important to do. The goal for any service and retail provider is to raise dopamine for the consumer.
Okay.
We don't make purchases on logic. We make purchases on emotion. That's why we drive.
Say it again.
We don't purchase on logic, we purchase on emotion. That's why we drive different cars, have different watches, different clothes, because it's emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes 2.5 seconds to make a purchasing decision to hand over the credit card. 2.5 seconds they make that decision. Dopamine literally made us stupid for a few seconds because it knocked out logic, right?
Okay.
As we exit the store, bag in hand, dopamine dissipates and logic comes back up. And you think, what the hell have I just done?
Hmm.
The fundamental goal...
See, I thought it was alcohol that did that.
Well, that can do it as well.
Okay.
Right. But dopamine is...
I always tell people at a fundraiser, get them drunk and they'll donate so much money. But anyway, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, dopamine literally, anyone that's presented, so you have to, in the first few seconds, engage them and excite them.
Mm-hmm.
Not with features and benefits. You really have to engage them. Take it off, put it in their hand, apply it to them,
right.
Their hands.
Just imagine.
You can't, just imagine what this will do for your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that with Amazon.
So you said that you don't rely on the service providers.
No.
As the people who sell?
No.
So what's the advice that you have? Because hairdressers have been beat up for, you know, 30 years. Sell. You are a salesperson. Use this word.
Right.
Memorize this script. Your retail percentages is down.
Well, look, don't get me wrong. I don't think you should stop educating service providers to sell products.
Got it.
I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, if we think this through, nobody goes to college to say, I want to sell products. It's
right.
Never going to be their primary objective. Why would you have a business within a business and have people whose secondary job it is to sell it?
Right.
Why not have either digital components? Look, when you go to Target with the intention to buy one product, I defy anybody to walk out there one product.
If only it were only one, right. One product. Oh my gosh!
But if you only say, "Well, I only need this," you walk in. The environment seduced you into buying it.
There's that word again, seduced.
What education did you get from them? None. What service provider helped you? None. You have to create that environment.
Interesting.
To do so. And that's the goal.
Is that when you say thinking to a higher order, is that sort of what you're talking about? Because how we used to think was, and yes, it was legitimate, to get the consumer to buy, we need to educate them on the ingredients. We need to educate them on the results of the actual product.
And that worked for many years until...
But again, like you just said, the example you gave, Target didn't educate me on anything, but they did seduce me into buying more than what I walked in there to purchase.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And bear in mind that all of the Apple Store staff are not on commission. They train their staff to handle situations. If somebody wanted something, Apple staff will never say unfortunately. They'll never use the word unfortunately. They say, as it turns out. Everything in life...
Wait, back that up. Because unfortunately...
It's a negative word.
Right. Unfortunately, we're out of that today. Right. Unfortunately, right. We can't fix this. We can't solve your problem today.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, your haircut just really sucks. Okay. Unfortunately. And what's the word they use instead?
As it turns out.
As it turns out.
Right. Oh.
So there's some hope to that. As it turns out, there's hope.
Everything in life is in the positioning. Everything in life is in the positioning. Huh. How you position it.
Mm.
And that's the most powerful thing, is how you position it.
Oh, just the words, just the language. We learned that years ago. Companies like the Ritz-Carlton. They're not booked up. They're fully committed for the night.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about Apple then. Do you have a bird's eye view into that model and how they train and stuff? What can you teach us about that model?
Apple have built their model around understanding the consumer, period. They have created so many algorithms of truly understanding the emotions of what people buy, what environments would work. They've set up their products like museums, where you come in and you play with their products. There's nothing for sale that's on the floor of Apple. Nothing. All the middle, where all the things are, it's not for sale. When you've played with it and you've made a decision, then the service person brings your new toy out of the back for you.
Oh, so what you were touching is not what you're taking home.
Exactly.
That's what you mean by that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a little... look, Apple have looked at their model and they're not happy with it. Most retailers would think Apple is the pinnacle. They've gone over 1 billion sales recently.
Right.
So yeah, they are the trend that's bucking the retail demise that's happened over the last few years. Mm. I think if you look at history, we've always had modern times. We've always lived in modern times. Whatever period it was modern times. When the agrarian society diminished, the industrial age grew. When the industrial age diminished, the technological age grew. There'll always be a positive future, not in the direction of the past, maybe, but there'll always be a positive future. And for retailing and service, I strongly believe that people are social. They want to connect with other people. There'll be a time where, in a couple of countries, in France as well, a lot of people are saying, I just want an ordinary phone. I'm getting too addicted to my phone. This is coming from millennials.
Right.
They see that they are addicted to their phones. They've never seen a life without the web. They've never been born before the web. So that's all their experience. But their connectivity and communication is probably not as good as it should be, because it's all about Instagram and Facebook and social media. And I think that's a challenge that we are all responsible of trying to educate them, of trying to communicate with them.
Hmm.
It's an incredible generation. Don't get me wrong. It's right. incredible. But it's us that has to adapt as well as them.
Right. I fully believe and am a big champion of just that word, that philosophy of connect. Because we're not connecting. You walk into a restaurant, there's five people at dinner and they're all on their devices.
I never allowed that at my table at home.
Yeah.
If I can just share a story of Michelle Obama that she said yesterday. At 6:30 every night in the White House, Barack Obama came down to the dinner table with Michelle and the kids just to talk about their day. Hmm. Just to talk about what was happening in your... Try to make it as ordinary as possible. Hmm. Here you have the President of the United States. Hmm. And Michelle and Barack together made a point of, we've got to keep these kids as normal as possible. We've got to show an interest in their life, in their day. And I think that's a lacking a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lacking a lot in society, that we love our children, but are we really putting as much care into what their aspirations are, what their life is?
I think in the beauty industry, we do have that in our favor, that we can connect.
Yes. Yes.
With our consumers in a way that many other industries, almost no other industry can, in terms of we get to touch them, we get to engage with them in ways that other businesses and other right. that sell other services and products cannot.
Right. I agree.
And then we have the likes of you who can teach us how to do that in a much more profound way that produces better results.
Yeah, it's important that it isn't just connecting with our consumer, but we understand that our staff have challenges as well, and that we are here to try to help them and understand them, empathize with them, and see what support they would need. They're not employees, you know, and that's the challenge that we have to kind of get across. They are part of a team that together makes the success of the business. Hmm.
You have a bullet here just titled fear. What do you mean by that?
Well, fear is one of the most important components that stops us reaching our potential. We fear everything. That's why we have life insurance. We fear germs. Hmm. Germophobia. Starbucks, again, is an analogy. 83% of people, when they go for a newspaper in Starbucks, will not take their top newspaper. They'll take the one underneath. Because subconsciously, not consciously, they fear that someone's read it and put it back. Hmm. It's not hygienic. Hmm. In a ladies' bathroom, only 5% of ladies will go into the first stall. They'll go into the second, third, or fourth stall. Because they fear that the first one's been used more than, and it's less hygienic. It's... Hmm. So they go into the other one. Don't ask me how I did that survey. But we fear everything. And it's important to have fear, because if we didn't have fear, we'd be walking in front of traffic.
Right.
We'd be jumping off buildings. We need fear, but we need to control it. When you have fear, you are focused. Fear focuses you, and that's an important thing. But a lot of people have worry. And worry is a dead energy. Worry doesn't achieve anything. Fear can help you. Worry doesn't. Hmm. So most people have not expanded their business because they fear, well, maybe it won't work. They've not gone in to open up a third or fourth location because fear stopped them doing so. They've not invested here because fear stopped them. That's not to say we should just do anything and not be fearless. Of course, we need fear. But the most important thing is to use fear to your advantage. Mm. Be fearful of things that you don't do stupid things, like jump off buildings, but make sure that you have fear in check and not worry, and do a calculated thing, because that stops us reaching our potential.
That's great. Somebody once told me that worry is negative goal setting. So I like what you're saying. This has been incredible. I mean, I love just look into the consumer's mind and the psychology behind all of this. It's not by accident why these top retailers are set up the way they're set up. It's not by accident the way these top service industries and companies are so successful and can continue to reinvent themselves over and over and over again.
Yes.
So, good for you. You love this, don't you?
I do, because I love studying people. Hmm. I mean, many years ago when I was first doing this, I was psychology, and I decided to go into environmental psychology instead of behavioral psychology. I actually stood outside of stores, watched people for hours.
Did they ever call the police on you?
Well,
who is this guy?
Yeah, I try to do it discreetly as possible, but I stood outside stores. I looked in different malls.
Didn't Walt Disney do that? Because that's the reason why I read they have park benches everywhere, because he would sit on park benches and that's where he'd just watch people and that's where he got all of his ideas.
I think you're right. Park benches. I think you're right. Yeah, and I never had a park bench, unfortunately, okay. But I just watched people. I watched the direction they walked. I watched the speed they walked. And I saw what worked and what didn't work. And as you walk into a store, the ability to see the back of the store was key. So it brought me into the back. Huh. If I had these barriers in front, I never really progressed further.
Right.
So yeah, just study and watching people. It's fascinating.
That's great. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
We live in extraordinary times. 150 years ago, which is a very short period in our history, there were no airplanes, there were no cars, there were no antibiotics at all, just 150 years ago. 40 years ago, there was no internet. 50 years ago, there was no television. Now we can read the consumer's mind and study the consumer. We should build our businesses not around our own vision, but around the consumer's vision. The retail stores, service providers that do that will flourish in any market, in any economy, recession. There's always people that do better. Some people grow. It's because their business model goes against the norm of what happened before. And I'm hopeful. I'm positive. I really believe that we are going to be strong. If we adapt our businesses to what consumers need and really study the consumers' needs, we will do well.
And it's not a guessing game. Or it doesn't have to be. We've got the information.
Business is not a spectator sport. It's not. You have to create a strategic blueprint and evaluate that constantly.
That is great. You know, it's not often that I have guests on Masters who are, usually it's more motivational or educational, and this is more about, wow, this is going to drive us to increase revenue, and there's certainly never anything wrong with that.
Absolutely.
Great stuff. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure, Wynn.
It's my pleasure.